most of the experts one might turn to, regardless of what age you might seek their advice or intervention or knowledge, are going to be, you know, humans. So you're not going to get much from all of the experts, whether it's the imam or the rabbi or the priest, bishop, cardinal, pope. You're just going to get a body of superstition and belief and faith, miracle, and the so-called authority of miracle. So you're really interested or open-minded or open-hearted about the strange presentation of life, and you want a way to mature, a way to contribute, a way to feel yourself through it, to satisfy what you're made of, your own, right, your own karmic field. You want to satisfy your own karmic field. So, you know, your parents and the TV and your sister and the teachers and your friends at school and the neighbors and the rabbi and the priest and the people at Quaker meeting, everyone on TV, the movies, books, right? Art, music. Right, you're overwhelmed by the human drama field, the violence, the makes no sense at all. And maybe you're hungry or suffering or confused, because no matter where you turn your attention, you're getting a truly unsatisfactory reflection of what reality might be. Because it's just being filtered through posers everywhere you go. And no one acknowledges cathartic revelation unless it comes through the permissible venues or conduits of cathartic revelation. So then maybe you have to go to an evangelical place where healing and snake venom and rocking and rolling and talking in tongues is happening, because that becomes a socially acceptable, though a little bizarre, process of cathartic revelation. But if you're not into that, then you probably will end up using drugs or alcohol or anything high to satisfy your hunger and craving for ascension. I mean, those lovely folks that founded Insight Meditation Society, Sharon and Joseph and
Jack.
Sharon and Joseph and Jack. Oh my. You know, each of them, and of course many people in their generation that they know, were all hot on the trail of ecstatic revelation, of a transcendent experience. And they ran into, you know, various gurus and teachings and things along the way that each and every one of them that piqued their curiosity and got them really heavily on the scent of what's this all about? And they decided, well, we don't really know what to do. Why don't we find some property and we'll do mindfulness? You know, we'll do Vipassana. It'd be interesting, if, you know, to talk with them, even if they would have any recollection of it, to figure out when you guys met, whatever that was, how did you figure out that the thing to do was, you know, go through the motions?
They just sort of, I don't know what the word is, anglicized it, you know, basically made it more palatable to the mainstream America, something like that.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, which was probably, a brilliant, bold move.
I mean, that's sort of what the Maharishi did, you know, only he came along with, if you, you know.
The Maharishi did the same thing. Yeah, you know, thanks to a number of celebrity testimonials.
Yeah.
Right?
That didn't work. Yeah, running into a heat, that worked out pretty nice.
Yeah. We've had enough Hinduism and Buddhism and even anglicized shamanism thus far, now at 2015, to ask ourselves some reasonable questions, starting with, what the fuck? And you could say, well, it's been successful beyond our wildest dreams, because you can go most places and find one or several yoga studios or some kind of mindfulness class or group, maybe even devotional chanting is even, you know, becoming popular in more places.
Unicorn meditation?
Unicorn.
Run into that?
Dolphin?
Dolphin.
Shit happens.
Yeah, we missed that. Damn it. That was last night. No.
The dolphin thing?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But even though the, you could say the incestuous consummation that has occurred has sprouted children, like yoga studios and mindfulness classes and stuff. But it's a different question altogether whether that proliferation of offspring born of all kinds of incestuous experimentation, literally and figuratively, has really created a stronger field, a stronger wave, a reliable field, a reliable wave of what it was they were looking for in the first place. Ascension, ecstatic revelation, ways to live one's life wholesomely, whatever the fuck that means, solutions for the pandemic of addiction.
We're still playing just as much as that.
Doesn't it? That dua? Yeah. I don't. Who would do the longitudinal study on the emotional, spiritual, functional, relational health of the family, of the education system, of the political system, of one's life, of the employer-employee relationship, of the generosity and altruism of the corporatocracy? I'm sorry. It's not working. I mean,
well, maybe it's just too little, too late. You know, it's just
hard to know.
Because there's all these other forces that are like, you know, all this bullshit stuff. I mean, what's coming up on one side is overwhelmed by the other side.
Insight meditation has a successful, both a financially and spiritually successful path in Barre, Massachusetts, and at Spirit Rock on the West Coast. right?
So it's basically a community of like-minded people.
Well, they are retreat centers.
Oh.
Retreat centers and, you know, workshop centers. And the community that supports them comes and goes because it's part paid and part volunteer, right? But you have this really fun dharmic weave between the Spirit Rock centers and the Tibetan teachers that come and go and the yoga studios and places like Kripalu and Omega and, you know, ashrams and stuff. There's a kind of a karmic weave, but I don't know how often they get together and say, how we doing? I mean, the IMS teachers will meet annually, if not more than once annually, and they'll get a pulse on how they're doing and, you know, what they think they should do next with respect to the Dharma. And you've got Dharma celebrities in Washington, D.C., and Boston, and, you know, Pema Chodron, wherever the hell she is, right? Boulder, blah, blah, blah.
Was she in Nova Scotia?
Yeah. Or wherever. Yeah. Jon Kabat-Zinn, right, in Worcester, or wherever he travels now, I'm sure, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, they get together sometime, but, I mean, I don't know if they... If they you know, really talk about the pulse of the Dharma in the West, or whether they interface with the people that are into yoga and devotional chanting.
I don't think they would have any clue as to any other alternative anyway, right? I mean, even if they got together and said, hey, you know what, guys, this isn't gonna happen.
That would be a meeting I'd like to see.
Yes.
When all of those esteemed Geshis and motherfuckers got together and said, this isn't fucking working.
Doesn't Spirit Rock, though, sort of welcome other traditions there?
Yes, they've all, I mean,
yeah.
They all have become
but
eclectic to a point.
A family of traditions, let's put it that way, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, can you imagine Jeff going up there and get in time on the podium and then being invited back to feed it?
No.
I mean, you know.
They just take that stuff too, like, I don't know, if they're worried.
I mean, you know, really.
Yeah.
Throwing fire on their paper. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
sort of like,
even if you're successful at propagating through incestuous and, you know, even healthy consenting adult relationships, centers all over the place for the me generation. I mean, look at the Omega catalog, which recently came out for the summer into the fall.
Thank goodness, I don't seem to be getting
it. And it's this thick, and you flip through it, and it's like, SOS, man. Same old shit. Byron Katie, Adya Shanti, Pema Chodron, those are the kind of the big names, Harville Hendricks, you know, John of God. So, and then there's the mindfulness of eating, the mindfulness of cooking, the mindfulness of intercourse, the mindfulness of heat, gong, you know.
Psychology crap.
All the psychology crap. Yeah, I mean, it's really just like, ho fucking hum. And yet, I'm sure they're going to fill up, you know, and I hope that they have a wonderful year spiritually and financially. You know, when you talk to those guys, they say, well, the workshops kind of break even. You know, we make a little bit of money on residential rental.
They don't really charge a lot for their workshops.
Well, depending. They can. I mean, Byron Katie's asking for big money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the teachers don't make a lot by presenting at Omega, unless they're a big name, you know. So the money is made from the gift shop and the cafe. All the profit.
I think, though, the stay there, it's tons of money to, like, to live there for a week. Like, $300 dollars a person to share a room, a very basic.
Well, that's, meals and lodging, right? Meals and a room.
And a lodging, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But it's just interesting when you look at the numbers, the accounting side of it. When they're in the black, and I hope that they remain in the black, it's the cafe and the bookstore.
Yeah.
That's what does it. Everything else is kind of like break even. But break even is a big statement, because when you've got grounds and machinery and plumbing and maintenance and winterizing and summerizing and air conditioning, you know, it's like, whoa, it's big dollars, big costs. Human resources, recruiting, the catalog, the publishing.
Yeah.
Huge endeavor, huge. Yeah. I mean, all we do is set up a microphone and eat popcorn. Low overhead. Low overhead's the way.
Did you get any response? I can't imagine you got a response from that open hand.
I got a response. The celebration coordinator cordially said, be patient with us while we figure out how to accommodate your request or your offering.
Okay.
And a nice note of thanks for participating.
Okay. It's something.
Step by step. Yeah, it's not like it's going to amount to much. There's a big difference with respect to intimacy and availability when you're a audience member being entertained, as contrasted with you're in this for really serious reasons, that your interest and your vector for direct encounter with the same shit that Joseph and Sharon and Jack, oh my, were interested in, can come to some actual fruition, can be felt, not just as an ongoing accumulation of philosophy. Because there's a lot of clever people with a lot of clever ideas and, you know, defended personas about what enlightenment and stream entry and jhanas and a thousand things are supposed to be. Everyone's very proud of themselves. I mean, hands down, right? Oh, it's another day. I'm so happy to be me. Let's go get it. Right? I mean, even if you're miserable, that pride is present.
There's a Donald Trump inside everybody.
There's a Donnie Trump everywhere. Like, when people said everything has Buddha nature, that's what they meant.
They meant Donald nature.
Everyone has Donald nature. Sometimes it crowds out the Buddha nature.
Yeah.
Who's to say? But there's something about turning the corner on pride. having or sniffing out a vibrant, intimate, all in relationship with your own transmutative potential, which is not necessarily at odds with going to Omega and spending money at the gift shop and at the cafe and socializing with people in the midst of a massage program or a mindfulness program, you know, rock and roll. But this transmutative adventure places a different demand on you. It's a more intimate, give-take, shared, textural, experiential process. It's not just about having a spiritual experience up in Rhinebeck for the week.
And it's not scripted. It's not definable. I would say that it's none of that kind of stuff.
It's no.
That you can write a story about or.
Yeah. Why would you? Why would you waste the present moment on telling a story about something that happened to you before? This is too much fun. It turns out this is so fulfilling right, crazier and wilder than your most fanciful imagination. And that's a shock. That can't be true because of everything that we've invested in thinking that some other place, some other time, some other cathartic enterprise or miraculous visitation from a unicorn, a Pleiadian riding a unicorn, is what you're after. It turns out this is what you're after. And that's shocking.
We've been hoodwinked.
You totally, hi. Hey. You're totally hoodwinked.
That's what near is.
I mean, it's not a bad idea to practice mindfulness for 5 or 10 minutes in your lifetime. That's enough.
And then to do it at work all day, you know?
Yeah. Wow. But, you know, what happens in that kind of process, the insularity of mindfulness training, or even, you know, the Vipassana take-it-all-away approach, right? Body, right? Emotions, body, mind, feelings, thoughts, sensations, right? Not self, not self, not self, anatta, right? Vipassana training is really a depthful investigation into not self, anatta. And, of course, accompanied by, right, impermanence and more than your fair share of dukkha if you're on a 9-day silent retreat, you know, or a 3-month silent retreat or a 3-year, right, so-called retreat. You're going to have plenty of psychic phenomena arising that's not necessarily fun. Some of it's real trippy. I've seen people go to the hospital.
They bring it back after they, like, put it.
It depends on how serious the breakdown.
Psychotropic medication and then they go back.
I think if they've had a hard enough split that they needed psychotropic intervention,
yeah,
that's it. Retreat over.
I see. They just go home.
Well, they go home, or they can still hang out and wander around, and but not do the, you know,
not do the
burn. Don't do the burn.
I did.
Yeah, and some people have a mini break.
Yeah.
Take a day or two off and ease back in. You know,
well,
the teachers keep an eye on them as best they can. Right.
Yeah.
Remember that guy that came? It's been couple of times, but a long time ago, and the Panera, he had to go over and sit in a different chair. He was,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is a lot. Yeah.
Because they didn't speak for a while? I mean, the guys got cheerful, kind of, or choked up, or something?
Yeah, I think that's probably the same. Yeah, I'm sure.
Well,
Kenny.
Theatrical, sort of? I don't know.
Could have been.
I'm so cynical.
Yeah,
it's okay.
I think
it's all right. Everyone's a poser. It's true. And no, you can sniff it out.
But it is theatrical. I mean, there, yeah, he does a lot of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure. He's a big circle of miracles.
The, not just the silence, but if you're on an extended, you know, Vipassana, Guenka, whatever style retreat,
yeah,
you're entering into a fairly intense sensory deprivation tank. Mm-hmm. So the hours of seated meditation and walking meditation, silence, eating meals in silence, you know, occasional interviews, either in a small group or with a teacher, you are you. And so, you know, reading material is discouraged. I used to go to town and get breakfast, discouraged. Everything I did was discouraged. Go out and do the laundry, discouraged, you know. But I, when I did that, I mean, I you could say I was pacing myself. Yeah, and it was good. It was for good. It was good for me to divert the way I diverted and pace myself through that 3-month, you know, Vipassana experience. And then, you know, on the last half of it, after I'd worked through, right, my outlets, you know that I had outlets and took advantage of those outlets, I didn't need them. So the last half of it, I was, you know, pretty deep in there.
Did that stay with you after that? I mean, had to be a little.
What?
Well, yeah, I mean, where you went Yeah, where you went metal.
Yeah.
How long does it take for that to then
go away? The ride home. Well, yeah, I mean, there are lingering effects, but
yeah.
When you're, the difficulty with creating an artificial environment to explore subtle alpha, right, conditions of mindfulness and jhanic bliss, if you're lucky, you know, you go back to the world and your neurosis and all the other shit you got to work through, and it dissipates very quickly.
Did you actually sort of get a choice between Mara's daughters and pick the daughters instead?
I totally went for the daughters. I would be sitting there and going, where are the daughters? I wasn't worthy enough, actually, to be challenged by anybody. You know, I was like, I'm Mara, I'm worthy. And I'd look up, Mara, I'm worthy now. And he would be like, dude, you're a pushover. I'm not even going to mess with you. You know? Call me in 35 lifetimes. You know? That's like, hello, Mara. Oh, yeah, it's you? Oh, yeah. Call me in 35 lifetimes. Click. Then we'll see whether, you know, I'll send the daughters and the arrows and the flying monkeys and, right? You have to be worthy for Mara to pick up the phone. I couldn't even get a secretary. Well, you don't have to do a lengthy Vipassana retreat to come face to face with the primordial restlessness of your own nature, of your own being, of your own inventory of justifications for who you are, where you are, why you are, what you are, and what the fuck you intend to get out of all this. How far do you have to go to see that you're a poser? Not that far. And the mindfulness process, you know, it's kind of up to you, the practitioner, right? Is the mindfulness process there so that you can be shown what a fucking poser you are? Which is healthy, because then you can relate more strategically as you self-reveal what a phony you are. If you're just a phony, then you can't, right? You can't move forward. It has to be revealed. You have to come to terms with, I am incorrigible. So that all of that defendedness, all of those strategies that are in place, have a chance to mutate into humor, and then you can move to the next layer of what an idiot you are. Which turns out to be quite bottomless. Yeah. Yeah.
Bottomless idiocy
is what we have.
But the Vipassana retreats.
Yeah.
Are they? They're not really doing that. I mean,
who knows? I mean, you don't know what anyone's doing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's all like just chill, you know.
Chill. Well, it. Depending on the style of retreat that you do, there is, you know, a dedicated and mature interest and cultivation of, call it, sustained mindfulness and grappling with the demons of restless, let me out of here at all costs, right? Reflex. So you figure out how to entertain yourself, how to deal with your own existential demons as best you can.
But it's all internal. There's no external direction, guidance.
No, there are. There is.
You do meet occasionally.
Well, all throughout the retreat, I think there's a morning session after breakfast, after the breakfast and work period. The next session is Vipassana 101, 102, 103, whatever. So you're actually getting immersed in the education of the great, not this.
Shinden used to do this thing where you'd sign up and then he'd go to your room and meditate, and then he'd call like everybody check in with you or be on the phone with you while you did it. Because you did the big labeling stuff.
The labeling?
Like here in, here, gone.
Oh, yeah. And he's clever, so he's got subtle labeling techniques.
I think maybe from that guy, people like that. He's sort of such a mix, but
yeah. Well, even labeling, turns out to be a rather superficial strategy. Yeah, it is tedious.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, why bother? Partly, labeling is good so that you can see how profusely, profoundly restless mind and association and consciousness actually is. That your experience is, you know, it's a liquid chaos of impersonal association. And so the labeling, in a way, is, I hope, designed so that's revealed to you. Not that you're trying to corral or correct or assuage or medicate it. Because that would be all fucked up, because you can't.
No, with him it was supposed to be like, he claims that he went to one retreat, and that was how they did it, and he said he was going to go insane. He had to lay through every single thing he did. And so he says he woke up the next day, and there was no ego, it was just labeling.
Well, that's... Yeah. But mantra can do that, too.
Yeah.
You can trick this.
Yeah.
You can trick this into a harmonic, where through mantra, repetition, labeling, call it what you will, or even breath meditation, right, anapanasati, jhanic bliss, you can fool this into appearing to be ego light or ego free. You can.
It's a training, it seems like. It's a brain training.
Yeah.
Four elements training.
Right. But those are. I hope it's not sour grapes on my part. I'll have to check in with Mara. Hello? Anybody there? No.
It's like the insurance company that's disconnected.
Well, I mean, what's ego-free? That there's no thought, or that there's no afflictive thought, or that there's no sense of center? I mean, it's very, ask 1,000 Buddhists what ego-free is, and you're going to get 2,000 different replies.
Well, you know, it seems to me that if you are caught up in continuous thinking, and you are so aware that you're just going off and your mind is going this and that, and then you change it into labeling, and then you go into, you're labeling what is going on. And then pretty soon you're labeling all the time. Isn't that just as afflictive? I mean, isn't that just as...
It has its own... It has its own release. It has its own relief. You do mantra. You do a lot of japa, a lot of mantra. And it creates a harmonic.
Yeah.
Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. I mean, do that for 20 minutes. Half an hour. You're going to be able to send a really interesting postcard home. Mm-hmm. And in the Hindu world, name of God, right? Name of God through asana, name of God through pranayama, name of God through jnana, name of God through bhakti, name of God through, right? Singing, chanting, name of God through mantra. It's like, in a way, it's like, well, you're going to have to buckle down and do name of God 24/7 to get out from under the egomania that you suffer from. But how many people flock to the monastery to, do that? And even after they've been there for a long time, there's no guarantee that something has occurred. Or if they leave the monastery, you don't know whether they're going to become like some kind of street corner Bhagavan, or a software pioneer. And everyone wants money and success. after they finish their, you know, meditation program.
Really?
Yeah. I think. Yeah. Yeah, because being is so fond of itself.
They're just still like a rap star, my money, you know, like that kind of thing.
It's exactly like that.
First you get the meditation retreat, then you get the money, then you get the
money. Our default way of being is suffering from the imagination of psychological time. Suffering from the imagination of psychological time means we're not here. We're always elsewhere. By living referentially, we're always elsewhere. And we can't get any fucking joy out of the equation of living elsewhere. And that's why all the pride. That's why all the restlessness. It's not that difficult a formula, really. It's pretty, like, urgently simple. And so we think, well, the remedy to that is, you know, some Ramdasian thing. Like, well, I'll just be here then. That's no good. You see? The association or identification with being discreetly corporeal is, it's got you. So everyone wants to get money, sex, parking lot, good hair day, enlightenment. They're all on the same playing field, actually, right? To the body. We want this imposition of carnality, which we didn't sign up for. Oh, here's the imposition of carnality. Corporeality. Here it is. And it's not that great, really, in some respects. And if we're living under the rubric of psychological time, it can really suck. Because becoming is horrible. And all of the shame and accusation that's been laid upon us from the society at large to keep us robotically in line, that's no fun either.
And what you're saying is so unbecoming.
Oh, yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's why you don't want to say this.
Yeah.
No one will come to Omega if they say this.
There'd be maybe one or two.
Yeah, well, the food's good.
It's pretty good. I mean, think they would, especially if they, you know, we were aging or something. And the time of being a corporeal being growing out.
Yeah, maybe the emphasis on that is like.
Well, I don't know. Ram Dass survived a stroke. You know, now he's the ambassador of enlightened aging, yeah. Spiritual aging. Whatever it takes to get your face on the book. And make sure Deepak writes the testimonial.
I think I actually bought that book. I don't know if it's the last one.
Hello, Deepak. Oh, hi, Rich. How you doing? Rich. Pretty good. Got a new book coming out. Is Wayne gonna write something on the back flap? Absolutely. Count me in, Rich. Count me in, Dick. Das. Dick Das. Count me in. You can write some nice thing about my new book that's coming out. Maybe Jon Kabat-Zinn, we'll give him an advance copy. Maybe he'll say something about it. Talk about incestuous.
A consortium that Ram Dass wrote the last one, I think. Unless he's written other ones since. But he's not really writing. You know.
I saw that Pierce Grace thing. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. I did that
a while. Yeah, that's a while.
Yeah, so what's fun is you can do a very, can I say, efficient reduction sauce on this that's not very becoming. You don't really have a choice. As long as the flame is too low and you're not boiling yourself off fast enough, you will remain, for good reason and justifiably so, in the loop of that which is unbecoming, trying to get find an advantage. Ooh, 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 ooh. That's what life looks like. That which is unbecoming, namely myself, seeking for advantage. Hal, what percent of us are on antidepressant medication?
I'm not sure offhand, but it seems like a lot.
Pretty high, right? Yeah, very high. I mean, enough to say that you could argue there's a pandemic of self-loathing recalcitrance that requires pharmacological intervention to get through the fucking day. Someone could say that's a crisis in consciousness for, let's just say, Western industrialized society. And in Europe. And who knows what's going on in the third world, because it's just too much dense life, teeming, right? Suffering, making do with not great food and not great water and truly violent political systems and poor policing and, right? Like all those high school kids that got wiped out by the drug cartels because the mayor was corrupt, you know? Yeah, so we're seeing these really, you know, sorrowful, cathartic events happen all throughout the world and in all cultures, in all religious, pockets. Because this which is unbecoming is seeking advantage. Yippee-i-yo, kaye. For me, it doesn't matter much at all, but it's like, it feels like it's useful to get some purchase on the nature of restlessness, the nature of dukkha or unsatisfactoriness, the nature of vulnerability, fear and panic, the nature of compensatory mechanisms, narcissism in all of its, you know, blossoms, so that with an honest self-assessment, we can reply. You can't reply very well if you're a poser. If your energy is consumed with defendedness and compensatory behavioral reflex.
Because
that's a loop, yeah. Right? That's just the loop. That's the loop of the species.
This is going to be the most comfortable chair.
Thank God.
But I'll get there.
What's that?
I'll get there.
I mean, it would be fun to interview, even by postcard, you know, to send out a survey to everyone that has meditated at Insight Meditation Society for the last 40 years. Or 50, or
they
God knows.
Brain scans now.
And ask them, how's it going? How you doing? I'd love to see Joseph, you know, and Sharon and Jack just, let's say, sit in a hotel, you know, the three of them.
Yeah.
I mean, they could get more staff if they need it. And ask everyone, how's it going? Good? Mindful? Happy? Equanimous? Generous? Fearless? How you doing on the Eightfold Path? Ahimsa, right thinking, right this, right that, right this, right that. How's it going? I just don't know what the survey would reply. We don't know, because all we really see are the same old tiresome aging faces grace the catalogs like Omega Institute to teach the same old fuck shit again to the same or a new generation.
The whole Buddhist geeks thing now.
Yeah? Yeah.
What's that?
Buddhist geeks, it's like they're younger generation of Buddhists.
Instead of fixing their computer, they fix their spiritual.
I think there's an interface of technology and Buddhism kind of philosophy. Vincent Horn and Emily Horn.
Yeah, mindfulness on steroids.
Yeah. And there's that, what's the saying? Destroy.
Godzilla.
The son of that guy. The son of one of those Elder Bruce guys. Levine. Yeah.
Noah.
He does the picture of 12-7. Dharma punks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's plenty of room
after
all these years of proliferation to have clever, right, sidebars that suit the interests and the needs and the culture of, you know, various people that don't want to do mainstream Vipassana or something. Why not? Yeah. So, but here's the problem is this, is that the you're a singularity, you see?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's,
and so you can't really benefit from anything anyone has ever accomplished, including you. You can't benefit from anything. That's bold. You're a singularity. You are the bright, unafflicted, unincorporated, not corporeal, not conditioned or conditional. And so the great expanse of Dharma across all religions, all strategies, mean nothing to you. That's bold, because we're trying to be enrolled in a one of a thousand cultures or interfaith communities or recovery communities or our family. We're trying to get enrolled in one or a thousand weaves for self-justification and hopefully constructive self-justification, for esteemed self-justification, for libidinal self-justification, for smart investment moves justification. But you can't succeed that way because you are a singularity. You are the bright. And so nothing that anyone has done can touch you, or worse, help you. Nothing can help you. Now that you have to come to at some point. Otherwise, you know, you get enrolled as a celebrity in the fucking shit that you've made up. Now you're making a living off it, so you have no good reason to give it up. Like Noah Levine or his dad. Or his mom. love, everyone's a lovely person. I love everybody. I don't have any quarrel with anyone. Maybe people over there, but you know. I don't have a quarrel with anyone. Why is that? Because first of all, I'm lying. Second of all, because I'm the bright.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it's all part of the singularity.
Yes.
Where's the quarrel?
That's right. As the singularity, there's no quarrel. That would include with your health, with your money, with your loneliness, with your despair, with your existential panic, with whether someone likes you or doesn't like you, whether you've just been diagnosed. You see, this is a different order of magnitude of liberation from confusion.
And aren't diseases so silly, though?
Diseases are so silly. And
silly! It's like a comic book.
It's just, it's so silly.
Like a radioactive man or something.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, someone came here the other day that was given God's code to cure all diseases. You think that would be a bestseller?
You start thinking about it, they just make me laugh. I don't know what it is.
About diseases?
Well, just, you know, there's pain in my tooth the other day, and I'm thinking there's this nerve, and then I just start thinking about nerves and teeth and how you're used to chew, and it just makes me fucking miserable.
The mechanism of the biology,
yeah.
Right? The mechanism of the biology and its humors and urgencies and demands, right? Is kind of like, whoa!
This is crazy.
This is crazy shit, man. So we're up against a certain, you could say, cathartic membrane, cathartic question, which is, you cannot rely on your behavior or your experience to tell you anything about anything.
Is there anything you can rely on?
No. No. As a singularity, no. Except yourself. But yourself, in this case, is no longer, right, individuated. That's a very different shift in conversation or in ascension from fucking mindfulness practices or yoga or anything. How free do you want to be? Do you really want to continue to align yourself with institutions and belief and practices and superstitions and attention seeking? You know? And you have your face on the cover of some magazine or other as someone accomplished in one thing or another, and so you can feed into the neurosis and the sickness of the commercialized society and be recognized as a meaningful, lovely celebrity. Like, you know, Deepak, the workaholic, Chopra. Right? I mean, what? Seems kind of lonely. Hard to know. I'm not likely to ever have to suffer from it, so. What can I say?
That guy never stops.
It's a very different geometry to wipe the slate clean from the imagination and the hallucination of yourself than to keep adding shit to yourself to up the relevancy quotient. I really, really need to be more relevant. This degree of relevancy is clearly not enough. Not to me, not to anybody. I must be more relevant. Starting
through the universe,
today.
You are kind of relevant.
Yeah? Yeah? This is, you know, this is yours. This is creative. This is wild. This is out of control. This is, you know, the beauty of radiant chaos. And it's yours. It's you. Right? And the moment you assign meaning to it, then you're in the, you know, you're being, you're in the potty field of trying to get more relevance. Shit. No pun intended. That's the real cutting edge of, you know, mindfulness or jhanic penetration or yogic penetration is like, let's roll it back. It's nothing to fix. I know I'm on a day pass. I get that. I wasn't raised well. I'm not socialized. Loads of addictive, right, landmines everywhere I walk. I lost a leg. So, what do we do? What do you do now with yourself if no remedy is being sought? If no justification is being sought? If you're not suffering from the myth of becoming? If you're not suffering from the myth of relevancy? Or irrelevancy? If there's no fruition other than this. Can you drink from the fountain of yourself?
You know, the thought, idea of preparedness and this continuation of mental paradigms and physical paradigms.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, all of these spiritual things and built-in programs.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Keep on trucking.
Yep.
And then
you don't even have to press the button and they launch.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's like stopping that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shock. It's a shock to the whole thing.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So, I mean, that shock can happen, but it seems like the tendency is for it to sort of crush me back. It's all these inclinations and paradigms and build up habit and muscle memories. And,
yeah. Oh, it's on tap.
You know.
Yes. The crisis of confusion is on tap.
Do you think that there's ever been anyone, if there were a person, as you say, who escaped themselves?
Let's start with you.
I don't think I'm...
She's
start with me.
Why not?
I've had moments of escaping myself, maybe.
Well, that's turns out to be a fuckload of evidence. Not everyone you meet can say that, or would even think to say it.
Just because they were not aware that they have escaped themselves, or they haven't been, so to speak.
Or they haven't identified.
They haven't identified.
Yeah.
But I believe they have, you know.
I have no reason to doubt your instinct.
How, I know you say there's no such thing as enlightenment if there were, you know what I mean? But like...
Nothing I say is true.
In a sense, I get it. And in another sense, it's like it's completely frustrating.
Excellent.
Because I do on these little, you know... whatever, Deepak Chopra moments or Oprah moments where I'm like, I got it, you know. Groove kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
books have been written about the zone.
I catch myself in some kind of squirrel cage.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I'm thinking about people I can't stand
to
think about.
Right. You know? I can't stand myself for thinking about the people I can't stand.
Right.
Yeah. I get it.
Don't even exist, and neither do I.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And I guess that I'm making up a story about him.
Cool.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
The person next to me may have a completely different experience with that being.
If you're thinking, you're making up a story.
If I'm thinking.
Not just you. I mean, if this is thinking.
It's making up a story.
It's making up a story.
That's what thinking is, yeah.
That's what thinking is.
I want to stop thinking without a, and still have a brain.
Yes, well put. No, beautifully put.
Yeah, you have to know a little about me.
Like, I don't know about me. I don't want to have a stroke. I don't want to, you know, like, it would be cool to.
You're very demanding.
I am very demanding.
And you should be. It's good. Wise to be demanding.
Shut up!
electric shock
therapy might work.
Now they'll go in there. Which again, very silly. And they'll go in there and like outpatient thing and scrub your brain a little. Drop it a little.
Nice.
Well, now feel better.
Oh, let's go.
It have the, you know, you can do it yourself.
You can do it. That's right. You can. Yeah.
Scramble up.
Yeah. Like, doesn't that sound bizarre and, like, completely ridiculous?
Yeah, we can try it.
What's the intervention?
If I start to want to do that, just give me some booze, because...
Well, there's these, like, more milder sort of ECT things now, where, like, your brain can be manipulated.
Oh, I see. Like, yeah, sure.
So
a little neuronal stimulation?
Yeah, TMS.
It's like taking a chill pill.
Yeah, and they put it, you know, and they zap you or they stimulate your brain or something. How
is that different than medication? I
don't know. It's not. I mean, so far they're having some success with severe OCD.
I think it somehow brings more, it's probably, but something like more blood flow. But there's something more happening in one area of your brain, which is like a positive center that you can associate with something that you're doing. So if you apply that at the same time you're doing something, you should are more likely to go back to that state.
Well, there's got to be a trick. Who's got the trick? Who knows the trick?
Mindfulness practice is referred to as practice because it's practice in one way, training through mantra, through noting, labeling, through, right, will provide you with brain wave conditions that can relieve you from a restless mental association.
I have gotten moments of sort of distraction or relief from mantras, mantras with groups of people.
Yeah.
So a good-looking guy somewhere in the vicinity.
Right, a you hunk.
That's
you hunk.
The oldest trick in the book in this thing, right?
Yeah.
The oldest. Yeah, I mean, if I keep my eyes shut and Jai Ram, Shri Ram.
Jai Ram, Shri Ram, Jai Ram.
I wonder what the guy in the front's doing.
What
do you, some muscle gets flat, so you can do it. And labeling. Oh, if you just start saying, my mind, we're just labeling like basket, tree, person.
That can help.
Huh?
That can help.
There's different ways.
Yeah, I was thinking about that recently. Can help because you just like realize everything's just words, you know.
Yeah, so you're weaning yourself from the root, right? The neuronal root. You're weaning yourself from the root of low hanging fruit. which names things and free associates. As you wean yourself from those conduits and corridors, you start to pick up a broader textural contact with your own, call it, field. The field can reveal itself to you as being somatic or related to the, call it, the imaginary boundary of what we call the body, right? So that you can actually expand into physical space, and that assists with diffuse attention. So now that you're feeling a wider field of sensitivity than being myopically stuck in mental or theatrical association. So you move from fixity, theatrical association, to diffuse attention. And you can use any kind of method or right bridge to do so. As you become more acquainted with diffuse attention, then it becomes less interested in objects. Diffuse attention becomes less interested in objects and objectification. It's like if you're smelling a beautiful flower, right? It permeates the space. And the aroma and your enjoyment of the aroma is not too. Right? The fullness of a beautiful sound or a beautiful vista, a beautiful face, a beautiful aroma is a fullness which reveals a non-dual delight. So can your of diffuse attention reveal non-dual delight, because you're not in the loop of objectification. And the field is rich with nuance and subtlety and textures which are subliminal. So you become conscious, not through thought, but you become conscious through waveform, through harmonic, with subliminal data, subliminal information, subliminal texture. And
really, what a distinction.
And that's fascinating. It fascinates you.
But, you know, I was just today, maybe yesterday, I was passing by a field. And in the foreground were these kind of forms of wildflowers, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And coexisting with the wow is, hey, you really appreciate that stuff.
Yes.
Wow, look, you seem to be appreciated. I mean, there was this like other thing going on.
The interloper.
This guy cut the leg.
The interloper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, right. Well, that's not fair.
No. You know? No.
And they said, like, well, am I proud that I'm?
Yeah.
Is this a good thing? Is it because I've been told that like things like this are beautiful and you should appreciate them? And, you know,
that's what you want to be free of is the interloper.
Yes.
Yeah. I get it.
And
yeah.
I mean, I've done these things where, and it just sort of has come spontaneously where I'm like, he's looking at the field. He's driving the car. He's, you know, sort of third personing the whole deal. Mm-hmm. In a way, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it does give you a lift.
It does.
Yes.
But yeah. this other voice, this other thing, it keeps popping up.
Yeah, that's the weaning. We're weaning ourselves from...
Is that what you mean by consciousness when you're talking about consciousness sometimes?
I could be.
Yeah, I mean,
but probably not every time.
No, right, because it's such a like consciousness.
You know,
yeah. I think a couple, three things ago that you wrote.
Oh, just say no to consciousness?
Yes.
Right.
It's like this thing going on.
Well, yes, but I was also referring, you could say, to subtler textures than even the voice of the interloper.
Do tell.
The underloper.
The underloper.
Yeah.
Do tell.
Is that the interloper that you're in denial of?
Ask again.
The underloper, the interloper that you're in denial of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
I'm not thinking about that thought. I'm not really thinking about that thought.
Right.
Really, I'm thinking about that thought.
Yes. So there's a you could say an inertial force, right? Inertia is like if it's not moving, it's not moving. If it's moving, you can't stop it, right? That layperson's appreciation of inertia.
Right.
So the interloper, the presence of the interloper is noticed by something other than the voice of the interloper. The wildflowers and the unicity of the delight is felt, noticed by something that other than the delight.
Oh, wow.
Other than the what?
The delight.
The delight is symptomatic of what? Of, call it consciousness, appearing in the role of the observer and the flowers and the atmosphere of the beauty of it all, creating a moment of crescendo of not a care in the world, because beauty is all there is, and no one will ever talk me out of it. And then, boom, the interloper is like, hey, it looks like you're having a good spiritual experience right there. Right? Yeah.
This must be non-dual.
Yeah.
Non-dual, right?
Yeah, right? Right? So, you could say it's easy for us to be hijacked by the voice of the interloper, the meta ego that just loves to comment on every fucking thing, and doesn't matter, you know, if they're a buzzkill or not.
Yeah.
Right? And when you say, would you just shut the fuck up? It's like you're letting the interloper know that he or she is a total fucking buzzkill, and would you just get off of my property? Yeah.
But meanwhile, the interloper is, I mean, if anything, that's building the interloper up. It's like...
Yes.
It's in a way...
But, well, we do. We characterize. We dramatize, right?
The interloper doesn't care if it's positive.
No. We are having an out-of-body... improvisational experience of absolute beatitude, as in right now, and everyone wants to join in.
And everyone wants to be the best.
Yeah.
Improv person.
Mm-hmm. So you could say the presence of the interloper is really a good sign that you're on to something. Because the interloper's like, oh, me too. You know, not just you, me too.
It's like an attentive dog.
Yeah. Yeah, so then the commentary appears, and then as the commentary appears, you can feel yourself like fractured in a kind of manageable schizophrenia. Multiple personalities are appearing as a simultaneity within your own experience that have either cooperative or non-cooperative points of view about what's happening right now. You're that good. You're that good. Multivalent. But it's possible, or it's possible that You can discover the signature of non-affliction.
Inner lover or outer lover?
Doesn't matter. Yeah. See, it's a harmonic, right? As the harmonic feels diffuse attention, and that's just a metaphor, right? Because you're not actually in a volume right now. You're not in a place right now. It looks like this because it looks like this because it can. It fractalizes radiantly and looks like patterns. But what you really are is a bundle of disembodied sensation, which all of which is felt non-dually as an instantaneity with no interloper whatsoever. That's your actual experience. Just you're immersed in a total sea of texture, of feeling, of impression, which is transhuman, trans body, trans space, trans time. It's like you see, and as you your aperture naturally opens to that, which is already so. You're not going anywhere. You don't need to practice anything. You're opening your, you could say, gates of sensitivity to what your actual experience is showing you.
Yeah.
So we're weaning ourselves from the comfort zone of belief systems that place you as a conditioned corporeal extrusion in space-time. You're weaning yourself from the confidence in that. And the interloper's like, Jamie, where are you going? Hey, 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 right? And so there is, you could say, a certain kind of fun in parts of you going, dude, I don't really like where you're going. You know? Dude.
Come on, let's play.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, because where you're going does not include me.
Yeah.
And the interloper knows this. And will say, you know, will distract.
Help the magic.
Yeah, and you can say that as you, you know, wander down the corridors of Neti Neti, the interloper becomes more playful, more creative, more bold in hooking your attention back to the presumption of space-time body-mind. Yeah. And that's cool, to have these frustrations, to see the interloper fucking up, giving you a buzzkill on a field of wildflowers. That is really great shit. Because you start to become more playfully familiar,
yeah,
with the schizophrenia that lives in you unabated. But there's no, you can see, but there, then there need not be any quarrel.
Right.
With it, or with all due respect, not even a need for it to be lower in volume or appear less frequently, because you're seeing the interloper in the same way you're right. Seeing the flowers, right? Yeah, you see, that's why, that's the underloper.
Yeah, okay.
Nice. The underloper's pulling back, and flowers, far fucking out. Interloper, dude, where have you been?
Yeah, how you doing, man?
Right? Right? And, you know, agonizing with having, you know, ecstatic monologues with people that are not in the room that I need to quarrel with. You're like, I'm brilliant. I'm a genius. You write some of it down. You know, grab a tape recorder and have these monologues with people that you don't like out loud. Record it. Play it back. You know it's going to turn into humor really fast. So part of the withdrawal or the weaning from, Jesus Christ, I can't stand myself, is to be able to go diffuse and see all of these elementals, and they truly are elementals, not other than you, but you are multivalent, so you're loaded with elementals, not just the so-called five senses. I mean, you run the bandwidth of it on any of the five senses, and it's like, it's off the charts. There is no limitation for this appearing to you, even though visual light, you know, the, you know, you're not going infrared and ultraviolet, right, through the so-called human eye. But your sensitivity for underloping, the interloper, is lit. Let it, that's why, just say no to consciousness, says no. But to what? You could say to the whole thing, to the whole mirage. You're not interested in the entirety of the mirage appearing to you as another mirage being, as, you know, as a corporeal, wearing a corporeal sheath in space-time. Fuck that.
It's more like the you that you may find yourself in a dream. You look at it, it morphs, you feel sometimes that that's cool, it's morphing, that's cool.
All you've got in this intimate moment, now this one, 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 see, is you're just witnessing morphic brilliance. And that morphic brilliance also includes the myth of your subjectivity. So it's not just what's outside of you, it's where you are and what you think you are is all being morphing into view, and so it has the capacity to identify, right, as an individuated locus of the bright. Like, how about a star? A star is diffuse, gaseous, strange, not quite sure what it wants to be, right? But over time, under the right circumstances of pressure, gravity, heat, and uber ignition, with enough fuel, it becomes a singularity of brightness. So we can see that consciousness is quite capable of animating itself as a singularity of radiant bright. Well, that's you. We don't know if the star suffers because it's, you know,
it speaks a different
language. It speaks a different language, yeah. You'd have to kind of sit with the sun for a while. I'm not sure if a human lifetime's enough, you know. Maybe there is a quantum entanglement that doesn't require space-time or lifetime, so you can hang with the sun and say, dude, are you suffering?
I'm way too light-skinned.
Yeah. You can do it from, you know, your living room.
You get a really good sunscreen.
Yeah. Okay.
I did have it, you know, I'm battling my head now, right? I'm battling the earlobe, but it's like, this part of me wants to say this, that it's like, oh, good, I'm doing good or something.
Sure.
But I did have an experience this morning. I walked out back, I was walking around, and all of a sudden I have a tree that has these, it's a southern magnolia, and it has like a really strong certain scent to it. And I was like engulfed in the smell of this tree when we were talking before about the smell, right?
Nice.
But I didn't, and I felt like it was permeating.
Yes.
But it wasn't, I wasn't identifying with it, and then all of a sudden I identified with it.
Right.
And just like a split second before I identified with it, I felt like I was, and maybe this is where like my interest in shamanism came from, it's like I was diffused with the tree or something, like when you were talking about, like I was with the tree, like I was, you know, I don't know, I was,
yeah,
you know, I was sort of like, and it's not the first time I've experienced something like that, but maybe I could write a book about all that, or several books about all that, and make some money.
Good. We'll come to your workshops. I want to be a groupie. Yes, so here, this present moment is the best portal you've ever had. This one.
Especially if you're eating stale coffee.
Especially if you're eating, is it stale? It wasn't bought that long ago.
No, it's
Sorry.
No, I love stale popcorn.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Oh. And stale. Stale turkey.
Oh, for a mandibular exercise?
I guess.
Nice. He probably makes some caveman a really lovely wife.
I'm pretty primitive at times.
Yeah.
Well,
it
must have gone the wrong way.
That can happen.
And I gotta get this knee back.
Yeah, good luck.
Got it.
Good. Thank God.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Whoa.
Because then...
Otherwise, you'd be here all night. Think of it as primatus interruptus. You see how familiar and easeful you are, right? Being yourself. There's no quarrel with you being yourself. And you can, let's say, be just as easeful with not being yourself. And the present moment, were there any, it turns out to be the portal, the wormhole, and the actualization for you not to be yourself. Which doesn't have any quarrel with you being yourself. See, mind, which is a movement of association and measure, is not so adroit at being itself and not being itself concomitantly. Because mind operates through comparison, right? Measure, and something being true at the expense of something else. That's how it imposes meaning on what you call the lather of present experience. You don't know what's going on.
It's focused. It's the opposite of diffuse.
Yeah. Then, it's movement. It's assignment. And the listening to the assignment, which is thought, is a kind of focus, right? Yeah. That's the mind that you can't, you're asking, would it just please leave me alone? Right.
And it's, going back to the physical evidence, that the Jill Bolt Taylor experience where she had the strip on the left side of her brain, and basically it was flooded with blood and killing cells. Like crazy. And the right side was... Wow.
Yeah.
It's without that, the way she describes it, without all that chatter. There was no chatter.
Well, here you go.
Need a little switch for the left side of the brain.
There it is.
Yeah, but you might
do things
like that to go to the bathroom
or... Another useful tool, since we're on kind of a tool theme. You don't find peace of mind in the mind.
Yeah.
Duh. Peace of mind would be better phrased if it were peace from mind.
Yes.
In that context, then, if you're looking to mind to obey your instinct for transcendence, it won't. It can't. Then you're like, oh, my mind is an obstinate motherfucker from hell. Okay, no problem. Then you don't seek in the mind for the fulfillment of referencelessness that you really, really, really want.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do you go? Right? Because it's, you still have to, you could say, travel within yourself, within your present experience. You could go to Machu Picchu, but it's not going to work. You could take ayahuasca, but it's not going to work. Except, you could say, very, right, momentarily. You have to figure out, if transcendence is on your dance card, where you're going to go right now. And it's not mind. So you have to become friends with the underloper.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe if you just become friends with the underloper, like, you know, I just started to criticize myself. That's just one big squirrel cage, but I started to criticize myself because I thought, because I came in here and I realized I just went on a big fucking tangent, which, you know, conversation in my head about the blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
I'm like, I was, yes, I did that. I should be making some kind of progress.
Yes, yes.
It's
right.
Not, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I was just sitting here thinking that maybe if I just said, you know what? That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Absolutely, it is funny.
Like, just, it's almost like labeling it, like just saying, making friends with the fact that, oh, I went on a little squirrel.
Yeah, that's right.
Know, or,
you're adventuresome. So you go on, one goes on.
And I'm the hero in the story.
You are the hero. You are the knight and the damsel in distress. You are the dragon breath. Yeah. Thank you. So here's the present moment. That's pretty much what you've got to work with. Nobody really wants to know that.
What's that?
That here we are. This is it. Not too intimate. We're more comfortable. Hiding out. Yeah, moment to moment is just a way of saying, I don't know what this is, but it doesn't quit. What's moment to moment mean? I don't know. This shit just keeps coming at me. That's moment to moment.
I like the moments that taste good.
Yeah, the moments it tastes good, rock. You can practice by feeling your present experience through your throat. You can take, like, play a little chakra game. Feel your present experience through the root. Through the reproductive, through the, you know, hara, through the heart, through the throat, through the third eye, through the crown. You can also feel your present experience through an organ. You know, like, how are your lungs doing right now, right? How's your spleen, right? You can feel your present experience through the vibratory sigil of your organs, the skin. Or even your, you know, endocrine glands, which are very mysterious to us because they're so crazily powerful, but they're doing their own thing, right? It's hard to have a relationship with your adrenal glands because you're like, what do you guys do? Or your pineal gland, or your pituitary gland, or your thymus, or your Isles of Langerhans, and your pancreas, right? You're not really sure what they do. I mean, it's even hard to figure out, like, to have a relationship with your liver, even though the liver does more than anything. Way more than Don Trump. Yeah, the liver's crazy. I mean, it's not human. It's beyond the beyond. In terms of how it multitasks.
It also sounds so
funny, like you said before, like the teeth and the jaw and the mandible. And, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But you need, not that you need to do anything, but you're looking for different wavelengths within your present experience to relate to your present experience. To get the fuck out of your head. To get out of mind as the, you know, controlling, attention-seeking interloper. Now, as you play around with it and you're like, oh, this present moment is like, it's way bigger than anything I could even think of, then you're not reflexively going to mind to tell you anything about it. Right? That's that simple. You realize that your mind can only come up with some kind of referential storyline, which is absolute bullshit, based on condition, stimulus, and response, which is absolutely untrue. So you're like, oh, well, and I won't use that. Like, well, okay, I'm not using the mind to tell me anything about this present moment. Like, wow, this is cool, man. Because the light's doing the telling, the sound is doing the telling, the temperature's doing the telling, the internal, you know, textures and moods, or they're all doing the telling, because you're actually living non-dually. You are living as an immediacy that has no time gap. The mind suggests the time gap, the movement of thought, the movement of association suggests the time gap, therefore it suggests the presence of you as being other than what this is.
You know, the story of a Beautiful Mind.
Yes.
That guy just got released.
He did. They say.
But it was so fascinating, and I didn't realize until I watched the movie a second time. But what triggered it, and I believe it was real in his life, is what triggered the realization that he had a mind that was doing its own thing out of control and making shit up.
Right.
Was when he saw the people that he would always see regularly, he realized at one point, they've never aged. They've been with me all these years. They've never aged. It's like a good scientific behind the scenes.
You mean all of his fantasy friends?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
They never aged. And it dawned on him, whoa.
They're not real.
They're not real.
Wow.
So from then on, he still saw them.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they disappeared.
He
still saw them, but he took it more with a grain of salt. He didn't buy into it.
A grain of pie.
Yeah. A grain of pie, yeah.
Well, just saying no to consciousness.
Yes.
Is that.
Yeah. Right.
Here's all this. Mm-hmm. You're like, this never ages. You're onto it.
Yeah.
You're like, you got to be kidding me. So then you withdraw whatever that suggests, both from mind telling you gobbledygook about this, because it doesn't know fuck all, then you find yourself withdrawing from, you could say, the repercussions of experience itself. Which is a very different way to hang than trying to heal shit.
Yeah.
Right?
I would say.
You're withdrawing from the imaginary repercussions of experience itself, and you're withdrawing from all the crap that the mind is trying to tell you about what this actually is, because you know that it can only lie.
Yeah.
So here you are.
It's this construct.
Here you are. You've relieved yourself of mind. You've relieved yourself of subjectivity. You've relieved yourself of any interest in what appears as the texture of experience itself. And you could say you're only fascinated by the fact that it's so. You're like, the fuck? Why is this even so? You're not going to get any mileage from the Big Bang. That doesn't explain anything. Nothing explains anything. Isn't that curious? The quarks and the Higgs bosons and the da-da-da-da. Nothing explains anything. That's the same reason why you don't go to religion after religion and religion and the mindfulness, because it doesn't explain anything. So none of them have any meaningful purchase on the beatitude of reality. And so what they encourage you to do, whether it's some kind of sensory deprivation or whatever it is, turns out to be useless. Now, maybe you have to go through it, right,
yeah,
to see that it's useless. No quarrel there. Or not. You're useless. Useless and irrelevant. And that's why you're so kick-ass.
I don't think you
want to
be useless. Or at least the interloper doesn't want to be useless.
That's right. The interloper's not happy being useless. But you are rock-solid useless. Reliably useless. Useless from moment to moment. It's not so much about being on the lookout for something that is enduring. See, we get tripped up by thinking, I want to find something or cultivate something or nail something down that's enduring. And that's just being like a hamster, you know, putting a seed in your, right, filling your cheeks with seeds. Yeah. You really don't want that. You don't really want to find something that's enduring in terms of a strategy for, you know, self.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you just want to liquidate on the spot. It's different, right? Liquidating on the spot relieves you from having to find anything or cling to anything or remember anything or take it out from a dusty hat box at the top of the closet so you can, you know, apply your magical powers. You want to just liquidate on the spot. And that turns out to be, you could say, much easier. You don't need anything from the present moment. You don't need it to be or look or feel a certain way. You're not grasping for creature comforts or psychic comforts.